Hello and welcome to the On the Whistle podcast. My name is Alistair Howarth, and we are, of course, talking today about one of the most interesting football leagues, I think, in the world and in Africa, definitely. And that is, of course, the Ethiopian Premier League, one of the more interesting leagues in African football scene. And here to tell us about it is our favorite Ethiopian football expert. He's not just a football expert, though. He's also a medical doctor and a scout. What an impressive resume you've got, Firu Azrat. Firu, how are you doing today? Where are you calling from? And how are things in Ethiopia?
Hey, how are you? Today's Monday, post-Easter, the Ethiopian Orthodox Easter. I'm in Awassa for the league games in the southern part of the country. All is good in Ethiopia, a little bit rainy because of the El Nino, but so far so good. I cannot complain, yeah.
Yeah, El Nino has been hitting East Africa very, very hard, in particular kind of Kenya. My own home country has been tough. I'm glad to hear that you're safe and you're well in Hawassa. Now, explain to me, Fir, why are you in Hawassa? Because you're saying you're there for the league games. You don't normally live there. What is going on that's brought you to Hawassa?
Yeah, actually, Awassa is my hometown. I'm back to my hometown almost after a year. The Ethiopian Premier League is being played in a bubble format. So we usually shift, cities after playing like 7 rounds of games in the like. So the 2023-24 season has started in Adama, in the central part of the country, 100 kilometers away from the capital. Then after we played there, actually we took long there. It took long there, around 50 rounds, almost half of the season we played there in Adama. Then we traveled to the eastern corner of the country near Djibouti, Dredawa, the little Ethiopia, is also known as Little Ethiopia, very beautiful desert queen city. We played there for 7 rounds. Now we are again in the southern part of the country to play the next 5 rounds of games. Then after, probably we are going to complete the season in Addis Ababa, in the capital, if not, maybe in Adama. So that's why, because of the bubble, we travel as a team, as all Premier League teams, to travel together. We play the league in one city, then we travel to another. So that's why I'm here in my hometown, Awassa.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, the bubble format, it feels almost like a bit of a throwback to COVID times. I'm thinking of, the NBA and thinking of, I think the PSL does it in different football leagues around the world. Why is it that Ethiopia is doing this in the bubble format? And, because it's been doing it for a number of years now since COVID. What is the reason that it's kind of stuck around kind of post-COVID?
Yeah, you need to choose the best one from the worst option. So for now, we cannot do it. I mean, it's a bit difficult for teams to play home and away because of the insecurity reasons happening here and there. So teams are supposed to fly week in, week out because of the insecurity. You cannot travel easily by road in some parts of the country. So for that reason, most of, not only the top flight leagues, the Ethiopian Premier League, but almost all leagues, in Ethiopia, do prefer that bubble format. Where hopefully things will change by the coming years. Maybe there could be some adjustments, but mainly for the security reasons. The other one is for the top flight leagues, for the Ethiopian Premier League, most of the stadiums, infrastructures are not to the criteria set by the Ethiopian Premier League share company. So for the league, so most of them do not, go hand in hand with those criteria. So the home stadiums for the teams are not going hand in hand, even if there is a good work, especially with CAF club licensing protocols, especially in the last 1 year. There is some change, but because of the infrastructure reasons, because as you know, our league is on TV, so the league to have its own standards, which meets the TV standards. So for that reason, we are playing in a bubble format. Mostly we are using, by the way, the university stadium. So in Ethiopia, most of the universities to have a state-of-art stadiums, better than those stadiums used by the public, by the clubs or by the city administration. So mostly, for instance, in Adama, we are using the university stadium. Here in Awassa, some years ago, we've been using the Jimma University stadium, even if most of the stadiums are not up to the, they are not completed and not a fancy one, but for the leagues, they are standard. So that's why we are staying to that format, yeah.
Mm. And that makes a lot of sense, you know, in the context of not only COVID, but also in the context of the conflict going on in Ethiopia. Obviously, like you say, it's, you know, Ethiopia is a huge country kind of to begin with. But when you have conflicts kind of in certain areas, it's really hard to manage that from a footballing perspective. So I'm glad to hear that football has kind of been able to continue and in many ways thrive despite the challenges. And one of the reasons, you know, you mentioned the stadiums and how, you know, there's limited kind of infrastructure. And one of the reasons that you're, you know, you've been talking about how there is a real need for infrastructure is you mentioned the TV. Now, you know, one of the interesting things about the Ethiopian Premier League now is that it is on TV, but it's not on domestic TV. It's on SuperSport, and SuperSport have chosen to buy it. Now, as someone from Kenya, SuperSport has come in before to East Africa. They did a deal with the Kenya Premier League, and they eventually pulled out because of the lack of infrastructure, because of the issues with the way the league is running. You know, why has SuperSport come in to televise the Ethiopian Premier League, and how has that impacted the league in terms of the finances, in terms of viewership? How has that kind of changed things?
Well, I mean, Ethiopia is the second most populous country in Africa, next to Nigeria. And then for any transboundary companies, it is a hotbed. I mean, the opportunities are there. So SuperSport have been in Ethiopia for more than two decades. They've been doing the English Premier League and other leagues. So everyone is loyal to, when it comes to pay TV, most of us grew up watching games through that pay TV platform. So I think 5 years ago, by the next year, it's going to be 5 years. So they realized the potential there. And I'm sure that they sold lots of decoders because of the Ethiopian Premier League, because Ethiopians, we are very successful in athletics. We are good runners, but our heart is in the football. So, you know, we do love local football. So for most of us, it gives us the chance to watch our local footy. So most of the people who are not that much interested in pay TV, paying and watching, now they have started to pay and then subscribe the SuperSport, and then, you know, watch the game. So Ethiopian Premier League do put lots of, I'm sure that we do love English Premier League. English Premier League is very, very famous here. But at the same time, when it comes to SuperSport, I'm 100% sure their sales value has increased because of the Ethiopian Premier League. So we do love to watch our football. So when it comes to the implication, SuperSport or the multi-source Africa or Ethiopia do have both the broadcast rights and the title naming rights. So starting from the first year, they start paying the league $4 million, and with some increments to the end of the broadcast year, which means by the next season, they are going to pay $5 million. In total, $22 million, apart from the technical support. In total, it gives the full package is around $68 million. So financially, not only financially, but, you know, it gives, for instance, the league now has started to have some standards. So they are now, mm-hmm. we have started before even the CAF club licensing. The Ethiopian Premier League has set, the share company has set some standards because of TV. So they are saying this stadium qualifies to host games because the games are on TV, for the security of the cameras and the like, for the Obi-Wans and the like. So through that, we start to delineate lots of standards apart from the financial income we get from the SuperSport. Then teams have started even to take lots of technical support. I mean, technical trainings, for instance, head coach, deputy coach, they usually attend a yearly state-of-art trainings home and abroad because of the SuperSport, you know, technical support accord which they signed with Ethiopian Premier League. So lots of things happened. I mean, It helped us in some way to professionalize our league. So to start thinking of what's happening in our neighbors in Tanzania, what happened in Kenya, in South Africa. So every of the clubs, not only the clubs, the league officials, they start to, you know, to delineate themselves to learn what's happening in the other parts of the continent, especially in the, on the continent, so that they can take the league to the next level. So it helped us a lot, apart from the financial support, and then also just telling us our product now. Yeah. Even not only that, some years ago, cities do compete to host the Premier League because of the super sport. Because when the super sport comes, it showcases their city. What do they have? So they can easily showcase what they have to the continent, to 44 African countries. So the application is bigger, more than the financial game.
Yeah, and I love that, how we see that improvement in the other aspects beyond the financials when you bring in these big TV companies. You know, I think, you know, my experience of recently being in Tanzania, it's the exact same there. Obviously, it's not Super Sport, it's Azam TV, but that there's been so much improvement in the Tanzanian Premier League, not just from a financial perspective, but in terms of that professionalization, the improved infrastructure in stadiums, you know, even simple things like, you know, refereeing standards improve, and you see a lot less corruption because everything is a bit more transparent. There's, you know, you can see everything, you can watch everything. And so, but whereas I think it's interesting from an Ethiopian perspective where, you know, maybe that national TV, you know, product doesn't make as much sense, whereas a super sport, from super sports perspective, it makes a lot of sense. But also from Ethiopian Premier League's perspective, it makes a lot of sense to partner with super sport. Like you say, super sports had a huge presence in Ethiopia for a very long time. But also I love it from the fact that, like you said, now suddenly the Ethiopian Premier League is available to watch around the rest of the continent. Now, you know, if you're from South Africa, you're not necessarily thinking, okay, I need to be watching, you know, Fassel Kanema or whoever this weekend, but suddenly it's an option and suddenly there's a bit more interest. And particularly for a country like Ethiopia, where it's so big, you know, you mentioned the second most populous country in Africa, one of the biggest, you know, countries in the world in terms of population, but it's so kind of, you know, inward looking in many ways, such a proud country of its heritage and, you know, even using its own script and things like that. So sometimes from an outsider's perspective, it's really hard to break into the Ethiopian, you know, football scene or culture. And so I love that kind of super sport and that deal is making that possible. And one of the other things you did mention is at the financials. Now, you shared with me this claim that the Ethiopian Premier League has made recently, that it is the third highest paying league in terms of wages on the continent. And to me, that kind of blows my mind, because you have these leagues that have so much money in, you know, like the PSL, like the Egyptian Premier League, you know, and ones that are kind of growing more. The Moroccan Botola Pro is having more and more money put into it. The Tanzanian Premier League, you know, we talked a little bit about. But and then when you look at transfers, though, the Ethiopian Premier League isn't there at all in terms of transfer spending. And that's why I think it's a bit surprising, because you think of transfers, you're thinking these North African clubs and the Premier Soccer League in Tanzania. How is this possible, that the Ethiopian Premier League is a league where people are, you know, not just from the biggest clubs like St. George, but all the way through the league, people are being paid well, people are being paid on time, people are being paid regularly. You know, we're not seeing a lot of the issues that we see in a lot of the rest of the continent. How is this possible?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the highest paying league. It's been like that quite a while, like 7-8 years. There is an increment in salary. For me, I'm by the side of the players. I'm so happy for them to earn, you know, a good money. They deserve that. Mostly, but the reason behind is mostly, almost 90% of the clubs are owned by the government, I mean, by the city administrations. So, so for out of the 16 Premier League teams, 14 of them are funded by their city administration. So they represent some city councils, some city administrations. So that city administration or zonal administration will give them that fund. So they funded them. So, let's forget what's happening under the table and something like that. But mostly, most of the budgets that's allocated for the clubs goes to the salary. I mean, I would say more than 80, 90, even at times, almost all, except from some operational costs, most of the money goes to the salary, which is a wrong way. I mean, a team not having a state of art or even a standard stadium or training pitch, paying lots of money on, I mean, just they just put lots of money on the salaries. When you compare it, what's happening in Tanzania, Uganda, or else in Kenya, even in the neighboring countries, the teams do pay lesser amount of money on the salary, but when it comes to infrastructure, professionalizing their league, I mean their club, it could be by the professionals, by different aspects. They invest a lot on those aspects, whereas they pay maybe lesser or a fair price, I mean a fair salary for their players. But when it comes to Ethiopia, is the reverse. I mean, we are not very good in doing the infrastructure that helps us, for that helps the club to sustain for many years. Rather, we put all the budget on the salaries, which is very wrong for me. But that is a fact, because mostly, you know, it's funded by, it's not coming from the investor's pocket. Mm-hmm. So no one is going to ask you about the return. What is the return for my investment? So it's allocated, so you have to finish that money. So they are more of, they are worried about maybe the audit, something like that, whether it goes in the right way when the external auditor comes in. They are more of worried about that, but they are not that much worried about where they put the money, whether it goes to the pockets, whether they are doing it on the infrastructure or the club, you know, development and the like. So that's the fact. But mostly, I would say, because of it's being funded by the government, by CC administrations, that makes it a little bit, unhealthy. I would say it's unhealthy, high salary. Yeah. So, but I'm always happy for the players. They deserve to earn more than even the one they are earning. It has some effects on their career, but they're usually homesick. They don't want to play abroad, something like that, but still they deserve. I mean, they are giving at their best, so I'm happy for them. But that is a fact.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's so rare that players on the continent get paid what they're worth and get paid regularly and beyond, you know, the one or two big clubs. Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, comparing the Ethiopian Premier League with a lot of other leagues, you know, in Tanzania or even in the PSL in South Africa. You know, if you're at one of the big clubs, you're making an incredible amount of money. But if you're at one of the kind of relegation threatened clubs, unless it happens to be, in Tanzania's case, one of the government owned ones similarly to Ethiopia, you know, you might not be getting a great salary, or the salary might not always be paid. I know that's a big issue in South Africa. And you mentioned the kind of limits of being in this situation where you pay, putting so much money into players as opposed to infrastructure. And that's one of the reasons why I think, or you can tell me more about it, is that Ethiopia is, and from what I understand, potentially one of the only, if not the only, African league to be implementing financial fair play. And, you know, that's a big topic right now on the continent. You know, I think particularly in say, for instance, the South African context, where Mamelodi Sundowns have just wrapped up their seventh title in a row. And because they're owned by a billionaire, Patrice Motsepe, they can just outspend every other team in the PSL, and they can win it because they have so much more money. And so it's a big topic, you know, in terms of how do we stop that from happening? How do we, you know, make the league more fair? But in Ethiopia's context, is it to address some of these issues about where all the money is going? You know, explain to me, how has the financial fair play come about, and how does it work?
Oh, well, now there's something new in Ethiopia football in the last 5 years. The league is being now administered, regulated by the clubs themselves. So by the Ethiopian Premier League share company, which is apparently made of the 16 Premier League teams. So they buy their share. They are the one who administer themselves. Now they start to think about themselves. So they are now thinking of stability and then staying on the lane, I mean, on the football lane, because now they are, now we have to compete with the others, with the other neighbors, with Tanzania. Now we are seeing, through the broadcast, we are seeing our potential. We can sell our commodities continentally. But if our teams are not doing good on the CAF tournaments, even our national team is not doing good on the CAF, you know, on the CAF, in the AFCON, if we are not qualifying here every time, it's going to be a tough one. So now the Ethiopian Premier League share company, that means, quote unquote, I mean, the Ethiopian Premier League teams, they start to devise methods to cope up with the challenges they are facing year in, year out. So you already mentioned we're a good pair, but mostly, most of the teams do not pay their players regularly. I mean, they pay good money, but mostly they are out of budget in the middle of the season because they spend most of the spendings, I mean, their budget on the salaries and something like that. So among the many adjustments, among the many, you know, guidelines the Ethiopian Premier League share company has been trying to bring to introduce the clubs to the clubs in the league. Lately, there is a financial fair play pact where each of the 16 teams have signed, agreed, which was under study for more than a year. So they were doing extensive studies. They were auditing each team, their payrolls for the last 3, 4, 5 seasons. So they come up with a pact that can, you know, that can help them at least to focus to change some of the monies they allocate on the salaries to other infrastructure. So according to this financial fair play pact, which is different from the salary cap that was introduced 5 years ago, which was not work, it didn't work out because it was a salary cap put on each player, on each player's earnings. So according to when it goes to the Ethiopian civil code and the like, you cannot limit one can earn, an individual earns this amount of money. So, and then also it didn't help a lot because of that pact, there used to be lots of, you know, under table transactions and the like. Rather, by the new financial fair play pact, the teams do agree to have a cap on their total spendings of salaries, I mean, and incentives. So they have agreed so each of the 16 teams have agreed to not exceed the $1 million limit threshold that's given for salaries. So they can pay whatever they want for individual players, but the total, the cumulative, the summation shouldn't be more than $1 million per year. Mm. So for that, they have agreed, along with the Ethiopian government, with the financial intelligence agencies and the like, they have agreed to have some independent body which do the control and also which do every unexpected visits and then also that has access to their accounts and the like, so that they can fairly spend on salaries up to the limit of $1 million. Mm-hmm. So in the previous years, we heard teams spending like $2.5 million solely on salaries per year. So now it's going to prevent because teams, they can lobby with their city administrations. Maybe the city administration could allocate them maybe $2 million. So, but they are only allowed to spend on the salaries the $1 million. The other $1 million is going to be invested maybe on their infrastructure, on their youth development programs, on the capacity building and the like. So hopefully I will bring some calmness on the unhealthy transactions that's happening on the football paradigm. I mean, but those top performers in the league, if they perform good, if they are special, still they have the chance to earn most of the money that's allocated. Maybe it's not affecting the individual earnings. Rather, teams now they have started to think which player deserves this amount of money, which player doesn't deserve to earn this amount of money. So they are going to do a lot of stratification, and then also they are going to be very conscious on their choice, on their selection, which is a huge issue, a big issue in the previous years. Some underperforming players, we heard, underperforming players do earn lots of money because there could be some, you know, under-the-table transactions because of the signings. Now, the team is going to lose because there is a cap, so there's going to lose lots if they sign underperforming players, those with injuries and the like.
I think that is really interesting and also a bit a bit of a shame, because I was hoping when we were speaking about this that it would provide an insight into maybe how these other leagues could manage their financial fair play. Whereas to me, it seems like something that works really well in the Ethiopian context, right? Because like you say, if the clubs already have allocated $2 million or whatever it is, and they can only spend $1 million on the players, they have to find other places to spend that money. You know, they have to invest in infrastructure, maybe in youth teams, blah, 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 whatever it is. But I think, unfortunately, that wouldn't really work in a lot of other contexts. You know, I think, you know, for instance, thinking about the South African League, you know, if clubs were told, oh, you can only spend $1 million per year on players, they would keep the other 2 million or whatever. You know, they wouldn't spend it. Whereas in Ethiopia, because they're government owned clubs, they have to spend it, so they want to spend it. And I also think it's unique, because no other league, I think, in the world would the big teams want to do that. You know, I think again in the South African context, no way in the world would Mamelodi Sundowns agree to having a spending cap that's the same as Morocco Swallows or, you know, whoever it is. And so I think it's really great, and I think it seems to be a really kind of unique positive solution for the Ethiopian Premier League, and I hope that it's, you know, starts to see fruition. But I don't think it's something that would necessarily work in another context, which is a bit of a shame. Now, I wanted to ask you about one of the clubs that isn't one of the government-owned clubs. You know, 14 of 16 are, but one of them is St. George's, which is obviously the biggest club in Ethiopian football, you know, a giant of Ethiopian football, one of the biggest clubs in Africa in terms of supporters, you know, but again, being in the Ethiopian context, perhaps not one that gets as much kind of significant attention from outside the country. You know, a club that's been there for almost, 90 years, played a huge role in kind of colonizing and the nationalistic movement, and has been so popular, but they've kind of been running into a lot of issues recently. And, you know, tell me what's been going on with St. George's. What's behind some of the struggles that we're seeing at the club?
Well, St. George's is the biggest team in Ethiopian football. I mean, they're the pioneers. They paved the way in many aspects for Ethiopian football. You named it, from the nationalism fight against the fascist Italy invaders in 1930s to the phases where different regimes coming. I mean, they've been in the front line. They've been fighting, and then they're the one who introduced. I mean, who are trying to introduce something new, especially with a club ownership. I mean, selling their share to the fans, and the like, even if it was not a fruitful one. So still the struggle right now is part of, you know, seeking a new thing, part of a different paradigm, a paradigm shift from what's happening in Ethiopian football. So they are facing the financial struggles because they are doing it in a different way than other Ethiopian teams. Most of the other teams are relying on the government fund, whereas they are trying to find out financial, you know, input from other stakes, and then also transferring the ownership to their fans. So it's part of the challenge. I mean, it's not going to be an easy one for them. I would say currently they are in a deep financial problem because of one of their their longtime friend, the Ethiopian Saudi billionaire Al-Amudi, have been in some contention with the club board member, so with the board chairman and the like. So he stopped putting all the money he put on the club through his companies to support the club. So he stopped that. So there is now something happening there because of they are now losing a majority of their support, financial support from this guy, from the billionaire. But there is still an ongoing process where they're trying to sort out the issue. So I don't want to further comment on the details because it's going to be a speculation at times. So they're keeping it, they don't have a good culture, keeping it everything in their home, trying to sort out the problems by themselves. And then still in the last two seasons, St. George was a back-to-back winner, even if they lost this season. They lost most of their big players to other teams. They are still doing good. I mean, they've been in the title contention. Still, they are in the title contention, even if they are losing the last five games. I mean, they are not winning in the last five games, but they are still doing. So for me, it's part of the challenge where they are about to introduce new things. So it's happening everywhere in Ethiopian football. Mostly, their case is kind of different because of their style of, I mean, based on their leadership style, the way they get the fans and the like. But still, I believe that St. George had been, they do have that warrior spirit, and that I'm surely confident on them that they are going to come out of those struggles, find a solution for the internal leadership problem and the like, and then come back to the football, the Ethiopian football arena, because they've been doing good, and then surely they are going to do it in the coming years. They are going to come to back to their high day. So I believe that mostly a good case scenario for the for other teams, especially for other Ethiopian teams. Mm-hmm. Who are now planning to transition from being government funded to the other part. I mean, like independent, to be independent. So like yeah. Getting funds from other entities and the like. So it's going to be a good case scenario for them. So clubs should work on finding ways so that they can stay on the competition. Even if they do have some challenge, so financial stability, leadership stability, it's going to be a good case scenario. But I'm 100% sure we are going to see St. George back on the top flight league again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the high days again. Yeah.
And to clarify, so St. George is, you know, they've been owned for a long time by Al-Amudi, like you said, the Ethiopian Saudi billionaire. And so right now, are they trying to transition away from that? You said they've been having challenges. So when you say they're trying to transition to being, you know, having fans buying shares, is that like fans having a minority ownership of the club, or is that, you know, fans having a majority or even full ownership? You know, how does that work in terms of who does own the club now and who will own the club?
Well, Al-Amudi was not the owner of the club. Rather, he'd been like a guardian of the club in the last maybe 25 years, for the last 25 years. So he'd have lots of companies in Ethiopia. So those companies do have some partnership with St. George, so they can fund, you know, in a way of partnership. I mean, so they, those companies for the advert, or the like, he puts, yeah, for the sponsor and like, so he puts some money, which helps the team to grow. So even some, like I would say 8 years, 9 years ago, under Al-Amudi, I mean, even if Al-Amudi was there, the club was planning to sell some shares to the fans. So it was on process, but you know, in Ethiopia, lots of things happened in the last 5-6 years. So not only for a football team, but for even for other business aspects, it's kind of a bit a new topography is now introduced in the country. So it's not going to be uneasy, but they were trying to innovate. I mean, to find out some solutions, long lasting solutions for their financial problems and the like. So, but all of a sudden, abruptly, those companies were, you know, giving some money because of the sponsorship deals and something like that. When they pull out, there is some problem, financial problem at the St. George. But they are still trying. They are now bringing new sponsors. Even if there is some sponsorship, I mean, there is some leadership problems. There are some questions by the fans and the like on the leadership. The fans have been asking for a new election, board election, something like that. But that is the club inside matter, but still they are trying. So Al-Amudi has not been their owner, but he's been a lifelong supporter for them. He's their guardian. He's been doing a lot for them. So It's better to take like that. Hopefully, they're going to introduce the share, the fans share. I think selling some shares to the fans and the like, maybe in the coming years, so that they can settle on the football with their all achievements.
I kind of want to end by saying, you know, we've talked a lot about how, you know, how unique and interesting the Ethiopian Premier League is from the rest of the continent. That, you know, the fact that you have all these government-owned clubs and you've got financial fair play and the kind of, we're looking to move towards, you know, sustainable future for the clubs and in a financial world where the clubs are, you know, able to support themselves. Maybe some of them want to go private from the government, you know, whatever. And I think it's really interesting because I think particularly the financial fair play and the government ownership and things like that, it makes the league, you know, super, super competitive in many ways that we don't see in a lot of African leagues. You know, and you say St. George's won the last couple of leagues, you know, they have, and they've been successful. But if you look over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 seasons, we've seen like four or five different winners. And I think that's really, you know, makes the Ethiopian Premier League, you know, one of the most competitive and interesting on the continent. But I guess my question is, you know, we're hearing all this great stuff and we feel like we're moving in the right direction, you know, both the finances and everything. And the Ethiopian Premier League does attract a lot of foreigners, you know, a lot of people coming from West Africa, from Ghana, Nigeria, and all over the continent come to play in the Ethiopian Premier League because of the good wages and things like that. And I guess this is a two-part question is, you know, is the league heading in the right direction, you think? Do you think Ethiopian football is strengthening and growing? And B, when we see the relative competitiveness and strength of the league, why aren't we seeing St. George's? Why aren't we seeing Vassal Kanema? Why aren't we seeing Ethiopian clubs doing well in CAF competition? Why aren't we seeing them doing well in the Champions League or at least the Confederation Cup?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I usually say, even on my tweets, Ethiopian Premier League is the best in Central, East and Central Africa. And deep down, currently, the Tanzanians are doing good. But when it comes to the potential, I believe that we do have the potential not only to be the best league in East Africa, but the best league in Africa. I mean, when it comes to the football culture, the love we have to our local footy, you know, even at times, I usually smile when I see that in all difficulties that we are going through as a country, as a nation, we are having a year-long league without any interruption. I mean, you need sometimes some kind of miracle to sustain in such circumstances. Now things are getting better, even if, you know, it takes time. You know, most of the things that are happening are not under the control of those football officials, so it's beyond their capability, which one way or another it will surely affect the football. For instance, you can remember the war in the Tigray region where we used to have 3 teams from that region. They just pulled out. They cannot compete in that time. Even if after 5 years, now we are having back, starting from the next season, they are going to come back again, compete on the top flight league. So by the next year, we are going to have 19 teams in the top flight league. So this thing surely affects the quality of our football, but it's beyond our control. But are we doing good? Yes, we are doing good. Are we on the right track? Yes, we are on the right track. We are seeing the implication not only on the top flight league but on the lower, you know, on the lower divisions, not only on the men's football but on the women's football. Now we are doing our homeworks. We are going to come and compete on the continental stage after we are done with our homeworks. We have a long way to go back home in Ethiopia, starting from, you know, professionalizing our league, putting the league on TV, financial transparency, you know, lots of aspects you can mention. Yes, we are moving. So a country of 120 million people, we're a football-loving nation, having a very less dominant continental teams, not only continental, just regional teams. We are not very good when we go even to Kagame Cup. It's been a while since we played even Kagame Cup. We usually skip that tournament even the SEKAFA. We used to be a very good one, but now we are doing, I believe that we are doing our homeworks. We have a long way to do, but when it comes to the potential, when it comes to the football administration, I think we are on the right track. And then we are going to come back to the continent with not one or two teams, with Fasil Kanema or St. George or mention it, Ethiopian Coffee or Bahardar or something like that. We are going to come as 16 teams. So we are going to have good teams who have a very good financial stability throughout the year, not only on the top flight league, but in the lower divisions. So, and then we do acknowledge that we are going to face lots of challenges. I can see the challenge coming by the next seasons, but I tell you, we survived. So, so far we came a long way. So we surely, come up, with evidence why we are the best league in Eastern Central Africa. So I do have I do want to acknowledge the Tanzanian league for their format, for their energies. We are learning a lot from them. We are learning from the South African, from the North African leagues. But we are bringing something at home. So when we come after some years, when we come top, it's going to be difficult for other nations to bring us down. We are going to stay there forever. So we are on the right track. But I tell you, you are going to hear lots of challenges coming up to our league in the coming years. But I think we are now building that the sense of resilience. So now we are helping our teams to be resilient, fight the challenge they have, not to break, to disband their teams easily for the challenge they face. So I think I'm so proud to say that we are doing good and we are on the right track. Yeah.
And I love your positivity, the confidence and the hope that things will get better. But I also love what you're saying about bringing 16 teams to continental football, because I think in African football, like, we love seeing some of these big teams do brilliant stuff, but it's also not a healthy climate where, you know, I would say in 90% of our leagues, it's just one or two teams dominate, you know, and even you think of the teams that are going far in the CAF competitions, you know, it's, you know, Wydad dominate, you know, they're not this season, but dominate generally in Morocco, you know, Esperance dominate in Tunisia, Al Ahly, you know, it's, and Zamalek, I think there's only been one other winner in the last like 40 years in Egypt or something crazy like that. Same with Sundowns winning 7 titles in a row, Simba Yanga. Whereas, you know, this idea that actually Ethiopian football is being competitive, and when they get strong enough to come into continental competition, it's going to be multiple teams. And I think that's brilliant. And I love that. And also, I think you're right to say, you know, it's important to remember the context of the league, and the fact that even the league is functioning is in itself a real achievement, considering what has been happening in the country over the last 4 years. Fur, I love the positivity. I've loved hearing about Ethiopian football, and I cannot wait to watch more and to see, hopefully, some of these teams thrive on the continental landscape. But Fur Azrat, thank you so much for joining the podcast again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and to share you some points about Ethiopian football. Thank you.